It's time now for KMTS Connections, a public affairs program from KMTS News, heard weekdays around 12:30, bringing you interviews and information regarding local nonprofit events and city and county services from Aspen to Rifle. Once again, it's Gabe from the KMTS Morning Show, Bill Kite, the executive director of the Glenwood Historical Society, the Frontier Historical Society, and the...
Used to be Frontier
thank
Historical
you, thank
Society.
Thank you. is here again. It's been a long time. I should review my old notes before we start these things. You, as with all large venues of any kind where people congregate, are still shuttered, at least as the physical location is concerned, due to COVID-19 and public health orders. But the website is still on and still active.
That's correct. And we have been trying to get people to submit their experiences during the COVID-19 pandemic because when we searched through the files that we have, the archives, to look at the comparison with the 1918 flu epidemic that killed so many people, we had very little records to go on. And so we're trying to encourage people, and still are, to go to the website, glenwoodhistory.com, and there's a button to kick on there that when you do click it, then you can leave any kind of voice if you want to. You can do a short video or whatever, because we want to leave for history a better record than what got left for us and locally during this pandemic, how people feel, what they're going through, their experiences. Because history is a living thing. It's not something you study about that's in the past. We're living history right now, and we're making history. So that's our main emphasis, to try to keep history alive. Even though we're not open, we are hopeful that people will continue to look at our website as we try to update it and make it better. You can also become a member there. That's just by clicking a button there, glenwoodhistory.com. So we don't have a physical presence yet. We're getting ready, doing all kinds of things to bring the museum up to the standards that we've already said we would do in our reentry plan. So we're adhering to the conditions that we're supposed to, and just hopeful that we'll be open any time. I was hoping we'd be open by the time I got on radio with you, but it wasn't to be. And it's always a pleasure to be here with you, Gabe. I have a lot of fun when we have an interview together. So thanks for the opportunity.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I always enjoy, well, you know how I love stories. And that's kind of ties in with history real well.
For sure.
When you say standards, are you talking about sanitation standards for the public, or are you talking about upgrading and changing out your exhibits at the museum?
Well, we're doing both. I'm changing an exhibit now because we have the opportunity to do so about the Ute Indians. Our display there is not up to snuff, so to speak, and I'd like to bring it up to the place it should be. So that's what we're trying to do before we open as well. But I meant protocols, the things that you have to wear a mask when you come in. If you don't want to wear a mask, then come back and visit us some other time, but you're going to have a mask. We've got the floor marked off for six-foot intervals. We're constructing this week a plastic plexiglass shield to protect the people at the front desk who, by and large, are volunteers who are retired. So we want to be sure to protect the public, the visitors, and our volunteers as well, and our staff.
Do you have a target date when you think the museum might be open?
I have no idea at this point. Again, we had hoped to be ready by the 15th, and we're going to have a lot of things in place that we'll just wait till we get the okay to open the doors.
And again, you're taking those steps so that when the word is given, you can go right into some kind of normal schedule, if not some restrictions in place to keep everybody safe.
Right. We are limited hours from 1 to 4, the same winter hours we had. Normally we're open from 10 to 4 every day but Sunday, and so our hours have stayed the same winter hours, 1 to 4, 6 days a week, off on Sunday.
How are you doing on funding?
Well, to tell you the truth, we're hurting right now, like a lot of nonprofits, like a lot of for-profits. I hate to think about how many places I like to go to that may not be there when all this is over. Restaurants, other stores that just need income. They need capital. So we're hurting. Our membership has been down for what reason, I don't know. And the board decided to go ahead and have people be able to have membership online. I thought that would be more convenient for people, but it seems that a lot of people that are members just didn't bite the bullet on that and still haven't joined. So that's one of the biggest things is our membership is down, and, of course, not having any revenue from people coming to the museum is hurting us as well. Luckily, the city of Glenwood Springs has and the chamber have offered for businesses, and we are a business, so it's nonprofit. We pay city sales tax to pay our utilities through September, and so most of our utilities, and so other businesses that applied for that got it. I appreciated that.
That Get Glenwood Going grant.
Yes,
I was just looking at that check as well. Yeah. It's as you say, it will help some with the utilities and that kind of thing, and unfortunately, it's just one step in what I'm afraid will end up being many more for commercial businesses as well as nonprofits.
Right, absolutely. And we also were very lucky through Alpine Bank to get a small business loan, the PPP loan, payroll protection plan. And that was great, too, because I had no idea whether that would happen or not. And, of course, that's the money from that's expiring this week. And so we're trying to figure out some new creative ways of bringing some income in.
Sure. In terms of commercial business, sometimes we have one more option, which would be refinancing and, you know, getting some equity out of loans and that kind of thing. I guess larger nonprofits maybe, but does the museum actually own any assets?
Yes, we do. Okay. We're fortunate to own the actual building that we're in, one at 1001 Colorado Avenue there, the old Shoemate building there. It's on the local landmark register. It's got a lot of work that needs to be done, and so we are now working with engineers and historical architects. We got money from the Colorado Historic Fund to give a historic assessment of what needs to be done to fix up the place where it should be, and then we'll have a capital campaign and try to get the money, raise the money through grants and that sort of thing to fix it up where it should be.
Gotcha. Again, if you have a story you'd like to share about COVID-19, what an interesting angle, by the way, Bill. A lot of people, I don't think, would make that connection, but you're absolutely right. This is or 10 years from now, this will be history.
Right.
And so it's important to share those stories and those experiences. And you never know, 10, 15, 20, 30, 40 years from now, may be an exhibit at the museum.
Right. And you know, we encourage people. I mean, it can just be a 2-minute video, a poem, whatever has struck you as really different that this has made you stop and think about. It's affected your life in some way. I think it's important to record that. We also, you know, have a partnership with Post Independent. We produce two to three-minute videos with them with history pictures. The one that'll be out tomorrow has to do with, the first one was just letting people know about us and how this whole thing about you can make history yourself. And then the second one was about the 1918 flu pandemic. And then this one is about the Utes. And so, people, I think in these ways, most people's attention span, all of us anymore, is pretty short. So 2 to 3 minute video is just right, and I appreciate the Post Independent and that partnership. We also, of course, I write a column every month called It's About Time, which I really appreciate that. And then, I have a radio show that I talk about land issues mostly, but every once in a while I work in something like I did yesterday about the situation we're in and how it relates to Native people. So we're trying every way we can. If anybody out there has got some ideas or some money in their pocket that's burning a hole, well, come see me and we'll talk about it.
And by the way, the website is glenwoodhistory.com and contact information there if you do have an idea if someone came to you and wanted to underwrite an exhibit, I'm sure you'd be willing to talk about that. And
absolutely, sure would. Yep.
Again, glenwoodhistory.com. We'll take a quick break and visit a little bit more with Bill in just a minute. You're listening to KMTS Connections. Welcome back to KMTS Connections. Again, this afternoon we're talking with Bill Kite from the Glenwood Historical Society. Again, the website is glenwoodhistory.com, currently gathering stories from local folks about your experience with COVID-19 in textual form, either a story, a poem, just a few words, video if you choose to do that, if you'd like to. also looking for membership. Again, like many nonprofits, like many for-profit businesses, looking for new and different ways to bring in income so that you can continue to operate and serve the people that you do on a daily basis, whether it be on the internet or hopefully someday in person. Bill, as far as you know, COVID-19 is concerned and the connection with the Spanish flu outbreak back in the 1918, 1920. Again, you worked for the Forest Service for so many years. You were an archaeologist for the Forest Service. Of course, archaeology is under the anthropology studies. So all of what's happening the last few months must be really of interest to you from a scientific standpoint.
Well, it is because, you know, you would think that as sophisticated as we think we are and advanced technologically, that we could have a better reaction than we've had to this all the way around. The public reaction, you know, we got tired of staying home after a couple months, and if we have a resurge, I'm wondering how human behavior is going to react to that. And so it's interesting to see that the more we change, the more we stay the same, because we're humans. You know, we have feelings, we have opinions, we have careers, we have callings, we have family. I mean, just all the things that make us human. Sometimes you to see the raw aspect of that, like you do when you have a crisis, makes it interesting from an anthropological viewpoint. But it also makes it interesting to see the people that rise to the top. And history, remember, is going to record what you're doing over this period of time. If you're a public figure or if you say something totally ridiculous, is that what you want your children and grandchildren to remember you by? And so history has a way of sneaking up on us, and some people talk about being on the right side of history. I don't know if that's the correct phrase, because history is written by the conquerors. Very few of the conquered are able to tell their story for some particular reason. But, you know, it's very important this period of time for people to realize that you're going to be recorded what you're doing, and if not, then who's going to remember you? And both the History Colorado and the Aspen Historical Society are doing similar things. So it's important if you live up Valley to try to get your stories into the Aspen Historical Society and the Aspen Public Radio there. So I think people just go through their regular lives and don't realize how important everyday things we do will be to people in the future. So hopefully we'll have more people respond to that.
Speaking of the Aspen Historical Society, I know a couple of years ago you, along with groups from other historical societies in I think Garfield County specifically, had worked to try and get some kind of continual funding source passed through a tax. Through COVID-19 and in the ensuing months and years, have you stayed in contact with those other similar organizations in this area?
A little bit. You know, the Sopras Historic Society, I think they changed their name and lost their executive director. The Railroad Museum disappeared. Mm. So I don't think sometimes that appreciation for history is where it should be. And I understand also that it's so important to fund those necessary things, the fire department, the police, the health department, and things that are really more important in some respects than a building sitting there in a historical society. But at the same time, if we're not keepers of our own history, nobody else is going to keep it for us. And then you're going to have these holes like we had when we look back into the 1918 flu epidemic, trying to recreate that story locally and just to have nothing there. So I don't know how you convince people that history is important, you know, or it's not to most people. So I'm still trying to figure that out. If anybody's got any ideas, I'm open for suggestions.
Something you mentioned brings up a question to me. From an anthropological standpoint, in 1918, most of the residents in this area were, you know, subsistence farmers. Obviously, we did have some towns and that kind of thing. I want to say had mineral production like coal and that kind of thing. Maybe that was still a little bit, had a little bit of an impact locally. But My point being, I wonder if one of the reasons why we don't have a lot of local information on Spanish flu is because most people, even though they lost family members, like, as I mentioned to you, both of my grandmothers had family members that died from Spanish flu. I wonder if they're still, very similar to a lot of us today, still trying to do what they can to continue surviving and eating. And when you've got 100 acres or however many of crops that are your what you're living on, you have to get back at it. You don't have time to stop and document sometimes.
Well, that's true. You know, and what I've discovered, I had a dual career in the Forest Service. I was involved in what they call incident management, mostly fires, but floods and oil spills and that kind of thing, and ended up being a public information officer. And there are only three things people want to know when there's a crisis. It's pretty simple. They want to know, first of all, what the hell happened, naturally. Secondly, they want to know how it affects them. And the third thing is, what are you doing about it? And that's about it. And in a situation like this, if you don't have somebody close to you that's got COVID-19, then it doesn't affect you. And so why would you want to wear a mask, or why would you want to write about it in history, you know? And so we tend to have a sort of a very tunnel vision of things when it doesn't affect us. And then when it does, we want to know only those three things, pretty much. And that's simple but complicated.
Years ago, when you remember we had the little newspaper merger, and one of those people that was cut from the staff came to work for us for a few months. And I will never forget, he once told me, he said, you know, I'm not much, but I'm all I think about. I think that's, I mean, it sounds conceited and self-centered, and yet I think that is really very true of the human condition, in that, you know, we do tend to think about, well, how is this going to affect me? Well, in advertising, that's our number one rule. You know, you talk to the consumer and you tell them how whatever product or service you're trying to sell is going to make their life easier, right? How it's going to affect them in a positive way.
Right. And, you know, the other thing that this has done is I really feel for musicians, people that have venues of where they count on people attending. I have friends who are musicians, and we have events. We had to cancel an event at the Hotel Colorado when this thing first started. And it's going to be difficult to try to decide how to have events to actually raise money, and that are needed events that people enjoy and have fun in. So we're having to look at, I think all of us, to kind of look at, well, what's next, and what do I do about it, and how can we survive? So we're in the same boat as most other people that are being affected.
And production. You know, the people that put on those events with the sound and video and that kind of thing, they've had nothing. You know, most of us, to a certain degree, can still continue to operate and bring in some money over the last 3 months. Production folks, it's the valve is turned off.
Exactly. And, you know, all of us like to go to big events.
Sure.
We had a Red Rocks concert that we were scheduled for and paid for, and it's not going to happen now. And so in the U Theater, I think that's a great venue for Rifle and for us locally, and nothing's going to be happening there that
right.
you can buy a ticket for, and
sure.
it hurts.
I have to ask, what was the show at Red Rocks?
You know, my wife buys the tickets, Kate, and got me all excited about it. And since I'm not going, I kind of put it out of my mind.
Oh, okay.
Still have to ask her.
Okay.
Is that fair enough?
Sure, okay. Sure, fair enough. I'm always curious, you know, what people's interests are, you know. Always interested in that kind of thing. But was it music?
Yeah, absolutely,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so some kind of band.
Yeah.
All right. We'll take one final break. Again, by the way, if you'd like to share a story about COVID-19 the last few months, for local history, you can go to glenwoodhistory.com, and again, looking for memberships, and just keeping fingers crossed that the efforts that have been undertaken over the last couple months at the Glenwood Museum have been enough, and someday we'll be able to open maybe to a limited number of people with some guidelines in place. And obviously keeping the staff and the volunteers safe as well with those plexiglass shields now that are becoming so common in retail establishments as well. Again, the website is glenwoodhistory.com. Back for some final thoughts in just a minute. You're listening to KMTS Connections. Welcome back to KMTS Connections. Again, this afternoon we're talking with Bill Kite from the Glenwood Historical Society. Again, still not open at 1001 Colorado Avenue in Glenwood at the Frontier Historical Museum, but hopefully soon. And the website is still operating, so you can leave a story there about your experience with COVID-19 to share in the historical record, I guess you might say.
Right.
Again, at glenwoodhistory.com. You can also get a membership if you want to support the Glenwood Historical Society as well and their endeavors in the future. Being a nonprofit, Bill, obviously you have a board of directors who you meet with on a regular basis to talk about how to get things done. And it's really, you manage the day-to-day operation for the Glenwood Historical Society, but it's the board of directors that really make the decisions. And ask any executive director, they will say that the board is really an integral part of what they do.
Absolutely. And it's a volunteer board. And, you know, I always hate to name all of them because I know I'll forget something. I'm so forgetful. But really lucky to have the board we have. We have Ashley Jamaron, Barry Dunstan, Carol Opeka, Sharon Howler, who's also one of our part-time staff members. We have Clara Miller and Lisa Passmore, and I know I probably forgot the way my brain works, but we are absolutely short one board member. So if someone out there would really like to be part of the Historical Society, we'd love that. And then there's also Rob Anderson, and I think that's it. But, yeah, we are short one board member, and it'd be great if we could we could have someone come in who's interested in history to help us out because we do need help. You know, I don't know how much longer we're going to be able to exist myself here. With we only have two part-time staff. I'm the only full-time staff member there. And, you know, I guess we could sell the building and give the money to all the members. I don't know what else you could do. But, you know, if we go under, that's a possibility. I myself would not take any of the money. I wouldn't want the board to, but you know, there's options out there somewhere I don't like to think about, but we're going to try the best we can to serve the public. You know,
we're all considering those options in the private sector as well. At this point, you know, it's just kind of a sign of the times. Do you know what would happen to the archives if you had to take those steps, Bill?
You know, that's the biggest worry I have is what would we do with all the information? Because right now we have one grant. We've applied for $150,000 to have a second party come in with a grant to digitize all of the newspaper records. That's fairly important because we have people come in all the time doing research or writing a book. Those records are public records, and we are, you know, public servants over there. We serve the public as best we can. So I have no idea. The Historical Society, Colorado Historical Society may not want it. The library probably doesn't. I have no idea what, you know, we have no plan for that, and I guess that's probably something we should look at this point that may force us to have a plan to what do we do with the collections.
Speaking of research, even though the museum is not open to the public, are you allowed to allow individuals access to the archives, like by appointment or anything like that?
At this point, we haven't done that because all of us that work there are being there at different times instead of being there together. Mm. It's really hard. Our archivist, Sarah Francis, is, you know, working from home like all of us have been, and we're just now starting to get back into the museum. So we really can't serve the people. We're sort of under the time limit anyway with how few hours we have to be able to help people. So we might have to start doing that. I don't know how that would work, but certainly if someone had an urgent need that's writing a book that's, you know, they want to publish tomorrow, we'd try to accommodate. But at this point, it's closed, and we'll remain so until we get the okay to open.
Again, the website is glenwoodhistory.com. You can learn about membership opportunities there. Also, contact information. So if you're interested in filling that open slot on the board of directors, you just get a hold of Bill through the website, and he can talk to you a little bit about what's expected. I think you said you meet once a month usually?
Usually we meet once a month. We'll be meeting hopefully next week out in the front yard there with chairs 6 feet apart. And so, yeah, we, you know, we're just lucky at this point to have the board that we do and be able to still exist. And we're hoping that people will realize the value that we have to preserving history and continue to support us.
Hopefully so. We can only hope. Bill, it's been a pleasure. It's I don't know. As we've mentioned before, you know, you do a little radio thing on occasion as well, once a month, and it's always interesting and a little bit different topic. I know that a lot of times you bring your archaeological background to those conversations as well. And so that kind of adds a different element that maybe most of us don't think of when we think about common everyday news and what's going on in the world. So it's always interesting to hear a different angle, if you will, to expand the mind.
Always a pleasure to be here, Gabe. Thanks again for having me.
You bet. Again, the website is glenwoodhistory.com. And go there, leave a story, a short video, a few words to describe your experience with COVID-19. And again, that'll be preserved for years to come by the Glenwood Historical Society. And you never know, it may end up being, maybe when we are no longer here, it could end up being one of those exhibits at the Frontier Museum.
Right.
Fingers crossed. And let's hope that this is the last one of these conversations we have to have for a while, right?
Right, Gabe. Thanks again for the opportunity.
Oh, all the best, Bill. It's my pleasure. Again, the website is glenwoodhistory.com. You've been listening to KMTS Connections, a public affairs program from KMTS News, heard weekdays around 12:30. It's another reason we are the most listened to radio station from Rifle to Aspen.